Before we get started, a quick heads up that this episode includes some profanity. Recently, I met up with an absolute legend at the Philadelphia Zoo in West Philly.
I knew I had to do something bizarre, amazingly bizarre, to snatch the media attention and say, I'm not dead. I wrote the real cornbread is not dead, no impact. So I thought about this place here. This is a tourist attraction. I come here, I bomb it out, have the choice but to cover it.
That's Daryl McCrae, better known as Cornbread. He's considered by many to be the world's very first modern-day graffiti artist. And his legendary status was cemented right here at the Philadelphia Zoo. In response to false reports about his death in a shooting, he spray-painted, Cornbread Lives, on an elephant.
Who gonna top that? I knew that would make me the elite graffiti artist of the world.
Because you were saying at the front gate, like, you started this, right?
Well, when I say I start this shit, I mean all of it.
Yeah.
I mean all of it.
This is Art Outside, a podcast from WHYY about the art of our public spaces and the people who create it. I'm your host, Conrad Benner, and for the last 14 years, I've been documenting these works for my blog, Streets Department. Today, we bring you the story of American graffiti icon, Daryl Cornbread McCrae. In this episode, he tells us the whole story of how and why he tagged that elephant and describes other graffiti writing escapades. We also talk about how becoming Cornbread has been a needed escape from the challenges he's faced throughout his life. On the day we met at the Philly Zoo, Cornbread told me that he hadn't been there since April of 1971, the day that he hopped that fence and spray-painted one of their most popular animals.
Did you know there was no elephants here anymore?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you gotta get a picture in front of the elephant.
Oh, shit.
You gotta get a picture.
There's no elephant.
Just this.
We're standing in front of the large granite sculpture of an elephant and its calf that's nearby the entrance to the zoo. It feels like a monument to a now historic and daring launch of an artistic movement. My eyes searched for a Cornbread tag on it. Unfortunately, this isn't a monument to Cornbread. The sculpture is actually here to memorialize the fact that the Philly Zoo stopped having elephants in 2009.
Arthur, can we ask you one more question?
Yeah, what's up?
Are there elephants here?
No elephants.
What happened to the elephants?
We don't have enough space to accommodate elephants, So we aren't able to have one.
Okay.
Cornbread painted a picture of the scene in 1971, back when they had elephants. It was a beautiful spring day when he went to go scope out the zoo. He said it was crowded, particularly around this one specific pit.
I want to know what was holding the curiosity. So I walked over and this guy's holding an elephant trunk. And they're taking pictures and he's holding an elephant ears and he's taking pictures. So a lady taking pictures, she said, so are you afraid the elephant's going to hurt you? He said, no, man, the elephant just came from the circus. He used to be in my people. He's harmless. Well, that's all I needed to hear.
He came back the next day with a big bag of peanuts. Cornbread says he hopped the fence and beelined right back to the elephant.
I said, okay. Hey, big guy. How long you been here? Eating my peanuts. We're looking at each other. Hey, big guy, what's your name, big guy? How do you treat you good, big guy?
You're buttering him up. Yeah.
After befriending the elephant, Cornbread said he came back again early the next day. It was daybreak, so it was dark enough for a stealthy graffiti writer to go unnoticed.
Into the pit, hop into the pit. He turns around. He looks at me and knows exactly who I am. I walks into him. Corn, free, lives. Went on the other side. Corn, red. I was kind of disturbed, perplexed, because I went through all that to do something that took me less than 60 seconds to do. No biggie. Up out the pit, and I just started writing on everything.
He tagged everything he could that day, not just the elephant, which was his original target. After leaving the pit, he thought he needed to do more to get the kind of attention he wanted. So he tagged concession stands, picnic tables, bathrooms. He wrote Cornbread Lives in bright red paint everywhere.
I really bombed this place out. And somebody was in that zoo, assuming I was home, and called the police.
He got arrested that day, but it was in jail where Cornbread realized his plan had worked.
I go to the police station and I'm up half the night sleeping. I'm on the bench. And every 5 minutes.
And they're obsessed with you, right?
The cops is like, which one of you guys is cornbread? I said, here. What's up, officer? Kid, give me autograph.
This is wild.
This is all day long. All the guys are holding, yo, cornbread, who the fuck is you? Cops asked me for your autograph. Who the fuck? I said, you gonna hear about me, home? And I became obsessed. And then the newspapers. I said, whoa.
This is when the phenomenon of cornbread really started to take off. After the break, Cornbread talks about how he continued to become especially savvy at earning free media coverage, how his acts and the attention went hand in hand to eventually make Cornbread a global name in the art world. And we go back to the very beginning of his story. And y'all, side note, we hope this is obvious, but we are not encouraging any of you to paint an animal or break into the zoo, but Cornbread's feat is part of modern graffiti history, so we're talking about it. Daryl McCrae was born in 1953 and grew up in the Brewery Town neighborhood of North Philadelphia. He told me that his childhood was rough.
My grandparents were two of the most God-fearing individuals I've ever met in my life. They were religious fanatics. I have a brother, he's a year apart, and we stayed under, it's like a cult. My father used to always talk about my mother's parents, talking about their cult people. Hmm. But back then, there was a lot of cults she had here. You know, called the Nation of Islam a cult, Noble Drew Ali a cult, if you want to call Elijah Muhammad a cult or Prophet Cherry a cult, it's a cult. But back then, they were people who were of high integrity, had a lot of respect, and there was a lot of love, there was a lot of unity, unlike it is today. And my grandparents, when they were religious fanatics, my mom worked, she went to school, and she wasn't doing that. She was with my father. Mm. My father didn't live with my grandparents. And she knew me and my brothers well taken care of. We all were with our parents, so she's not worried about us. Mm-hmm. But that had an emotional strain on me because I was having problems, but I needed special attention.
Sure.
Right? And I'd have nobody to kick my ass and correct me when I'm wrong, and I pretty much marched to the beat of my own drum. And my grandfather, he was up there in age, a soft-spoken man, and highly religious. The Lord this, the Lord, everything came out of the world was the Lord. It's all spoken, but carried a big stick. I had nobody to correct me. Mm. And I got tired of going to the church, listening to Prophet Jerry's sermons. We was in church sometimes 4 days a week. Mm. 7 days, I was with four times, sometimes five. It was a bit much. What I liked about the church was when I walked to church, I got to see my neighborhood. I walked down Columbia Avenue to see the seeing the gang members, the guys on the corners, and shooting crap, shining shoes, and the girls on the corner shaking their ass in the bar. And I'm like, wow, I was in heaven. So I started hanging with the bad guys.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And when they got in trouble, that was so exciting to me.
Hmm.
I mean, we'd be robbing freight trains.
What? And really?
Yeah, the tracks was right behind my house. Sometimes the trains would sit there overnight.
Hmm.
Man, we'd go in them freight trains. We'd sit there and hold deer. The deer would be about half a size of table. Mm-hmm. Stack them deers of deer meat, man. We would go in them, rob stores, steal cars.
And this is this would have been what, the early 60s?
The early 60s.
Like, and then you got caught, I guess, right?
I mean, I wasn't going to school.
Wow.
I was in truancy. If I wasn't getting locked up for truancy, I was getting locked up for curfew.
Mm.
You know, the first thing they asked me was when they judge, let me see a school record.
Mm.
I was getting suspended so much, my mom was taking days off of work and taking me back to school and being reinstated. I was getting locked up sometime 2-3 times for the same charge.
Mm.
I goes in front of the judge, he looks at my record, he looked down at me and the mom says, Miss McCrae, I'm going to have to commit your son. I looked at it like it was crazy. I said, commit? What do you mean commit? I said, I'm imposing a definite term on you.
You know what indefinite is?
No, what does indefinite mean?
Life.
Wow.
That's juvenile life. So I was, when I got there, it was about maybe about 10 other guys had life too. So I got there and we're seeing to go through the cafeteria. We'll go through the buffet line, get our food. And at the end of the buffet line, and through the chutes, you get your bread. Mm-hmm. And several times the bread was hard, sitting around all day. And with my defined disorder, I took matters in my own hands. Went to the back of the kitchen and I asked who's in charge. They said, Mrs. Watson. And Mrs. Office right there. I comes in, what can I do for you? I said, Mrs. Watson, my grandma made the best cornbread in the world. And I was wondering, would you consider making some cornbread for us? He looked at me and said, who gave you permission to come into my kitchen? I said, nobody. I don't have time to talk about no cornbread potion. I'm a busy man. Take a walk. I left. 2 days later, I come back. He said, man, you keep coming back and talking about this cornbread bullshit. I'm a busy person. I don't have time for your nonsense. Don't come back to my kitchen again. I made myself clear. 2 days later, I came back again. Kitchen workers see me coming in. Mrs. Watson, your boy here. My boy. Cornbread. He said, give me cornbread. I said, Mrs. Watson, no, I'm not trying to ditch it. He just gripped me up. Let's go. Boy would take me out to the cafeteria. Everybody sitting there. Everybody eating their food. He opened up the door. Mr. Love! Got everybody. My touch man got me gripped up. What the hell was going on? Keep this cornbread out my kitchen. Threw me on the floor.
Oh, wow.
Everybody started teasing me. Cornbread this, cornbread that. They're teasing me. I write cornbread in the back of my shirt. I get back to my unit.
Wow.
Everybody called me cornbread. I read a lot of poetry books. And my brother used to get a lot of love letters from his girlfriends. And I used to retain the passages. I like poetry. And I used to mix the poetry with the love letters my brother wrote. And then they said, I came up with. And I write love letters for the gang members to their girlfriends.
Hmm.
They would pay me chips, soda, candy bars. And I established a pool with these guys. And when I seen their names on the walls, I would write cornbread next to it real big. And every time I see gang members, they written on the jailhouse wall, I write cornbread next to it.
Wait, so their names would be on the wall for what reason? In the jail?
Yeah, right in their game. Like Spooky Boo, 15th and Climber Street Gang.
Gotcha.
You know, they thought by me writing the poetry, by me writing my name on this facility, that there was an artist that lived inside of me who craved to be recognized. And that was my expression.
Not wrong.
Right? So I really bombed this place out. And the gang members thought it was funny, but the administration didn't think it was funny. It came to me, you made a mess.
Now, explain what bomb out is for those who don't know.
When you write your name all over the place.
Right.
I really bombed out YDC. I mean, you'd have thought I suffered from some type of mental deficit. And you came in and it's like, the fuck? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Right? And they made a recommendation. I see the psychiatrist. I go see the psychiatrist. Now he wants to know, he's curious to know what prompted me to write cornbread all over the place. Mm-hmm. He asked me, do you got a problem? I said, no, I ain't got no problem. But you ain't seen shit yet. What's that supposed to mean? I said, when I get out of here, you're going to read about me. I'm going to set the world on fire. I knew those people thought I was an artist there. I bombed my place. I got special attention, accolades, and I just got all eyes on me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can get the same treatment on the biggest scale in the street. When I came home in 1967,
I started. How old were you then?
12.
Okay.
When I came home in 67, I just started walking bus routes. I walked bus routes because the bus carry a lot of people. And if you tell my stop, every time my bus stop, you see cornbread on both sides of the streets. And this is all your way to work. You come home, all you see is cornbread. You're going to start talking about that. That was something brand new, never heard of. That was a new, brand new phenomenon. And my name just started appearing all on bus routes. I started appearing everywhere. I started writing cornbread all over the city.
Do you remember that, like, so you're out, you're 12, you're walking these corridors, you're seeing do you remember the first time you went onto the street?
Yeah.
Was it with a marker or spray paint?
It was spray paint.
Plenty of people probably didn't like it, right? They saw
no. When the it was hard to accept because it was something brand new. I mean, it was blazing. It was consistent. You couldn't get away from it. I made you pay attention to it. You could not get away from it.
And where were you? Because I think now a lot of graffiti is seen like on abandoned buildings or construction material. Where were you putting? What you using every wall in the city?
I didn't write on people's houses. I didn't write on cars. I didn't write on churches. But in commercial buildings, it's mine.
Gotcha.
Right, and I made Philadelphia pay me attention. They talked about me, and they talked about Jesus. That was something brand new, and I would hear people talking about me.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was like Banksy.
That's actually one of the questions I wanted to ask you too. Is like you must have, because you're anonymous, right? This is before Instagram,
right.
Before video stuff, right?
Right.
You must have been in situations, and you just said it, where like you're hearing people talk about you.
Yes.
What was that like? What were people saying?
Who is this cornbread? It's just bold curiosity.
Right. Just like, okay.
People be looking for my name.
So when we met last week, we met at the Philadelphia Zoo. This is a place where you famously tagged Cornbread Lives on a calm elephant, a momentarily calm elephant that you had been sort of had your eyes on for a few days. And it was in an effort to get the news out that you weren't dead, a false news report to come out that you had died. You were not dead. You went around the town, wrote Cornbread Lives on a bunch of things, but you thought, let me make some big moment here and go to the zoo, get a lot of attention. So the elephant happens, you're released, you still want the attention, you still want the media to know that you're living.
It's just
you want to be unmistakable.
Yes.
So then you hear the Jackson 5 are coming.
Yes.
And they used to do this thing. Can't imagine it now in this post 9/11 world, but the airport wasn't as secure. And it sounds like the musicians would do this thing where they'd fly in, get off their plane for 2 seconds, sign a bunch of autographs, not even perform that night in Philly, and then just go off to the next destination. So you saw that as an opportunity to do something risky. What did you do?
Georgie Woods announced on the radio that the Jackson 5 was coming to do a battle against the 5 stair steps. And any
what does that mean?
5 stair steps is another.
Another group.
Ooh.
Gotcha.
Young kids like the Jackson 5.
Okay.
5 stair steps dug in their hands. They could really step and sing. And he said anybody who wanted the autographs could come to the Philadelphia airport and get autographs.
Mm.
If the Rolling Stones come to town, it was simple. Come out to the tarmac. Meet and greet, take pictures, handshake. And it was like that. The Rolling Stones with the Beatles came to town.
Mm-hmm.
It was like that. But 9/11 happened, all this shit changed. So he announced that the Jackson 5 was coming. If you could meet and greet, come out to torment and take some pictures and shake hands. That was not the case. It was about trying to get publicity for the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they came in, the plane came in, it idled about 2 minutes, the steps got down. Michael Kennetop, Stairwell, everybody went ballistic, screaming and hollering. Michael, Tito, Jackie, Marlon, and Jermaine came down the stairwell into the crowd. Total chaos, ballistic, screaming and hollering, hooping.
Sure.
I zipped up the steps, hold on to the rail, and write my name on the jet.
Can I ask a silly question? Did you go knowing you were going to do that to the jet?
Was that
your idea?
No. I wanted to go down there, and I was thinking about writing my name with several airplanes.
Oh, that's right. And then, right, you were already stalking the airport.
Right.
That's right.
But I knew that if I could write my name on this jet.
Right.
That would make me the elite graffiti artist of the world.
Right, because if you just tagged a plane, would we still be talking about it to this day? Maybe, but.
I don't know. I think planes have been written on before.
But right, you did the Jackson 5 jet, and 50 years later, we're still talking about it.
Yeah, yes, that's a different status.
When we were at the zoo, you mentioned that, this is how I interpreted what you said. You said in the early, was it late 90s or early 2000s, you were invited to an exhibition, and there were all these like big names and like other like really, really famous graffiti writers, and you got invited. When you showed up, everyone just stopped in their tracks and like expressed their admiration for you and what you had done and how you got this all started. And at least how I interpreted it, you felt shocked by it. And you felt true appreciation in that moment, and it kind of changed, it sparked a change in you. And that was like your to put it in modern contemporary language, your legendary era, where like beginning in the early 2000s, that's when you stepped into this like father, grandfather role of this art form. Is that a way to interpret it?
It's a feeling I can't describe.
Yeah.
But I don't feel good because I feel so I should have much more money that comes with this.
Okay. That's fair.
And that's all about surrounding yourself with the right people who can make it happen, as if you haven't done that yet.
It's really hard. I mean, this is a conversation I feel like I have with so many artists where it's like, yeah, it's hard to figure out how to make this a career and to support yourself with it. And then it's what you said. It's kind of like, who are you surrounding yourself with? Right. And
a lot of people find me.
Right.
You know, and I didn't know that it's so much bullshit come with this. A lot of it.
What do you mean?
Because I used to believe everything everybody told me and took it for face value. You tell me something, I'd be talking about it and nothing happens. You know what I'm saying? We're going to do this, we're going to do that. I'd be talking about it. And people got tired of me talking about what's going to happen and nothing happens. So.
Like all the people said, hey, let's go to the zoo, and then never turned out.
Well, that was something I had to do.
Yeah.
I had to do that. If I didn't, then I wouldn't be sitting there talking to you now.
So I only got my passport for the first time last year. I just started traveling, and I went to Europe this past summer. And when I was in Amsterdam, everyone says, you have to go to this place. It's called the Strat Museum. It's the street art and graffiti museum, blah, 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 of the world. You go, and there's like dozens and dozens and dozens of murals from some of the most impressive, important graffiti writers from the globe, from like history, right? Because this is modern history, and muralists and blah, blah, blah. And so I go, I'm excited, right?
Did you take a picture and send it to me?
Took a video and it felt, yeah. Well, and when I go, in the middle of it all is a big ass mural from you that says, Cornbread, I started this shit.
Yeah.
And I go, wow, that is that impact. That's right. The impact. And that is what you're, to this whole community known as, the person who took that first step. You know, as you mentioned, there were some people in like gangs who were doing graffiti, but you were the first one to say, I want to take it in this direction, make it about myself, create a moniker, and blow up as an individual. So as you look to the future, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want your legacy to be?
I want to be remembered as the world's first modern day graffiti artist who changed the world. I believe that had it been somebody else, it'd have been something different.
Yo, come take our picture. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Back at the Philadelphia Zoo, Cornbread wants a photo souvenir of his first return to the scene in over 50 years.
Why don't I step over?
And just like back in the day, he's stepping over a fence to pose in front of the statue of the stone elephants. And y'all, I nearly left my body in this moment. I kind of felt like I was getting a peek back at that morning in 1971.
You want to step over?
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that.
I can do that.
I forgot. You're Cornbread.
Yeah, do we have a marker?
No. I'm going to step over.
Yeah. Always a rule breaker. What are the chances there's no elephants here, but there's a monument to elephants?
Well, maybe they didn't want other kids riding on elephants.
That's season two, y'all. Five more incredible conversations with remarkable artists who create art in our public space here in Philly. If you've enjoyed this season, if you like what we're doing, this is where I invite you to give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can even write a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, tell your art-loving friends and family to check out Art Outside. Actions like these help podcasts like ours grow and keep going strong. Thanks for listening. This episode of Art Outside was produced by Alex Lewis. Our associate producer is Bibiana Correa. Tom Grassler is our executive producer. Art Outside's production, sound design, and mixing is by Rohom Productions. Rohom's executive producers are John Myers and Alex Lewis. Our engineers are Charlie Kyer, Diana Martinez, Tina Calique, Adam Staniszewski, Joyce Lieberman, and Al Banks. Our theme song is Snack MF Time by Snack Time. Our tile art was created by El Toro, a.k.a. Justin Nagtalon. Special thanks to Michaela Winberg, Michael Alcott, Sarah Moses, Mike Schiffler, and Kayla Watkins. I'm your host, Conrad Benner. Art Outside is a production of WHYY. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah.